I appreciate that in Rocky's prayer, he talked about how we can make application in our own lives with 1 Corinthians 7, especially with what we're going to cover. You wouldn't think that maybe application would be as necessary, especially as you get into the latter part of chapter 7 when it talks about being married versus being virgins and not doing it and that sort of stuff. And we'll get to that. But it's good for us to realize that this letter was written to the Corinthian brethren. Specifically from 7 on, he's answering things that were written to him about. But we face a lot of the same things they're going to face. Maybe not specifically the way they face them, but we're going to face pressures from the outside world. We're going to face pressures of other religions that are around us, the ungodliness around us. We have questions about our marriage. We're going to have differences in and amongst our assembly. What are some things that we can gain from that? And so I appreciate Rocky praying because for the application that we can make in our lives, because we'll be doing some of that tonight, is looking at how we can make application with this context to us as much as understanding what Paul was teaching them. Craig has got material for chapter 7 if you'd like a copy. Like I said, we're not really going to follow that, but just for the purposes of being able to look over it as a study guide. All right. So we're going to look at verses 17 through 24 first. So I'm going to read that context real quick. 1 Corinthians 7, 17, it says, "Only as the Lord has assigned to each one, as God has called each, and in this manner let him walk. And so I direct in all churches. Was any man called when he was already circumcised? He is not to become uncircumcised. Has anyone been called in uncircumcision? He is not to be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing, but what matters is the keeping of the commandments of God. Each man must remain in that condition in which he was called. You were called while a slave. Were you called while a slave? Do not worry about it, but if you are able also to become free, rather do that. For he who is called in the Lord while a slave is the Lord's freedman. Likewise, he who is called while free is Christ's slave. You were bought with a price. Do not become slaves of men. Brethren, each one is to remain with God in that condition in which he was called." Now, what do you gain from that context of scriptures? Nothing, huh? If you look at... Okay, so what was that, Alex? Okay. Here? Baptism does not change social relationships. And that's a good way to put it. If you look at 17, we're going to look at 17, 20, and 24. He reiterates something here. He says in verse 17, "As God has called each, in this manner let him walk." I mentioned on Sunday, verses 8 on, it talks about this idea of remain. Verse 20, it says, "Each man must remain in that condition in which he is called." Verse 24, "Brethren, each one is to remain with God in that condition in which he was called." Now, he gives specific situations in 17 through 22 to 24, somewhere in there. He talks about what?
Slaves.
Slaves and? Circumcision. He talks about circumcision starting in verse 18. You can go back and look, and this is something that is good to understand too. I'll draw it out a little bit more in a minute. But if you go back to verse 12, it says, "But to the rest I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever and she consents to live with him, he must not divorce her." If you go back to 11, it says she must, go back to 8, you see the idea of remain. You go through context of 12 through 16, the idea of if the unbelieving spouse is willing to live with you, then don't send her away. Go down to 17, 18 and on, this idea of if you were called while uncircumcised, you were called while circumcised, you don't need to change that. Circumcision is nothing to them now. It's about following God's commandments. Same thing as a slave. Their relationship with God, having been baptized, did that absolve them of any of the circumstance? I mean, any of the, well, let me put it this way. Does your conversion, or did their conversion supersede any and all other obligations or commitments? Does your conversion supersede any and all other commitments or obligations? No, it doesn't. No. Does it absolve you of all the relationship that you sustain? Sustain. No, it doesn't. Does it condone you not upholding other teachings of God or the commandments from God? No. The idea of being baptized into Christ is, it does change your life. You're to put off the old man and put on the new. But that doesn't absolve you of the marriage that you're in. Doesn't mean that my commitment to my wife changes from the standpoint of, well, now that I've been baptized, she's an unbeliever. Well, I can't be around unbelievers because I'm a new man, I'm of God, and so I'm just going to put her away. Here, the idea that, well, you know, I'm uncircumcised, you know, now I need to be circumcised, that was a Jewish thing, or I'm circumcised, I need to become uncircumcised maybe in the way that they live. No, you remain as you are. Your conversion affects you spiritually, but socially it doesn't. If you were called while a slave, do not worry about it, but if you're able to become free, rather do that. It doesn't change those circumstances. And I think about that in our lives. This text is to better help the Corinthians clarify their circumstances and situations that they find themselves in. You know, he talks about marriage earlier in the context, and then we get down to the social aspects of this. Talks about circumcision, talks about being a slave. How can we make application in our lives today? Maybe I have a job and I work with ungodly people. And I would bet you most people who work in the secular world, as opposed to maybe working from home, have to deal with ungodly people or work with ungodly people. Well, I've become a Christian, so now I need to leave. I need to abstain from that obligation. I need to forego my commitment to them. No, that's not the case. I still have an obligation and responsibility to that job. Now, whether I'm influenced by those people or if I want to change jobs because of the effect it could have on me, but you've still got a commitment and obligation to that. It's kind of that same idea of if you're a slave, you can remain as a slave. Just because I was baptized doesn't mean I need to quit my job unless it is going to affect me spiritually. Let's say I'm serving alcohol or I'm working in a place that isn't going to be conducive to being a Christian. But, you know, go back to 1 Corinthians 5 and see that, you know, you're going to have to deal with immoral people in this world. Because if you weren't going to deal with immoral people, you'd have to go out of this world. You know, we talked about ungodly spouse. You know, if you have an ungodly spouse, it doesn't condone you divorcing that spouse. Just because you were converted doesn't mean that responsibility you have to that person is null and void. Josh kind of covered that a little bit when he talked about marriage and divorce and remarriage in his class. You still have that obligation to that person. And Paul deals with that in the former part of this. The idea of you're married to an unbeliever. You know, just because I'm baptized. And I bring this up because people will use these excuses in the real world. Well, I've been baptized. God wouldn't want me to be married to a non-Christian. It's going to be bad for me spiritually. So, or I've been baptized. It absolves me of the unlawful marriage that I'm in. You know, your conversion doesn't absolve you of the relationship you're currently in. You still have those duties based on the relationship that you sustain. It'd be like having having kids. You know, you have kids, maybe they're with an ungodly spouse, or maybe they're with somebody you weren't to have a relationship with. You out of wedlock, or you're married to somebody who is unlawfully divorced, but that isn't, converted, you're baptized into Christ. Does that absolve you of the relationship you have with those kids, or do you still have responsibility to them? You still have a responsibility to them. Y'all can talk. I mean, it's okay. If this is making sense, at least give me a little head nod or something like that. I don't know. I just, there are things that you can make application to. Same thing with, I came up with some outlandish ones, you know. You still have responsibility to your bills and stuff like that. Maybe I didn't. I'm dealing with the loan shark. I'm not supposed to deal with them anymore. I still have an obligation to pay back my debts and stuff like that. But here specifically, we're talking about relationships. And so it's important for us to see what Paul is telling them, to remain as you are. And he talks about that through this context. that's questions that they had. Remember, they're dealing with being in a culture where this is new to them. They've been Christians for maybe 5 years. They don't know what they're supposed to be doing in circumstances and situations like this. So Paul's trying to help them line that out. Questions or comments? Yes, sir. When it doesn't. And I'm thinking of that, you know, that's primarily what Josh had dealt with. And the best way I know how to articulate, he did a better job than I did. But the idea that, you know, once you're baptized, your sins are washed away. And so now, like he said, I'm new life. No. Adultery is an act, by the way. Adultery is an act. And so I'm unlawfully married, but I'm also committing that act over and over again. So if you want to argue that point with them, well, no, you're unlawfully married. And that is an act that you continue to commit. Now, they're going to say, well, I just stay in the marriage that I'm in. Now, that's not the case. We need to look at what the Bible teaches on that. And there are a lot of people. There are a lot of godly people who study their Bible who would hold that position. That's not the case. We need to be careful about the duties that we have based on the relationships that we sustain to one another, and especially to our spouse in that relationship, and understanding what God would have for us when we get married and when we are going to sever that relationship, how we can do it in a godly manner and how we can do it in an unlawful manner, because that is rampant in our society today. And so it's important for us to understand that. Questions, comments, concerns? All right. Look on to verse 25. So he says, now concerning virgins, I have no command of the Lord, but I give an opinion as one who by the mercy of the Lord is trustworthy. I think that in view of the present distress, it is good for a man to remain as he is. Now we just found out two things in these two verses. What did we just find out? Okay, so it says, in view of this present distress. Sorry, I'm up here sweating. So we just found out that something is going on. Verse 26 brings it out, but you can make application backward and forward as Paul's dealing with what's going on, that there's present distress going on. So he's speaking to them with that in mind. What's 25 also kind of give us an idea about, too? It is not a commandment, but be mindful of it. I like verse 40. It says, but in my opinion, she is happier to remain as she is. And I think that I also have the Spirit of God. And an understatement. This idea of it's an opinion, it's not like my opinion or your opinion. It's a judgment of an apostle who's inspired by God, who has devoted his life to teaching the gospel. He's giving you sound advice, especially in lieu of what's going on in that time frame. And so what advice is he giving? So in verse 27, it says, are you bound to a wife? do not seek to be released. If you are released from a wife, do not seek a wife. But if you marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Yet such will have trouble in this life, and I'm trying to spare you. But this I say, brethren, the time has been shortened, so that from now on, those who have wives should be as though they had none, and those who weep also though they do not weep, and those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, and those who buy as though they did not possess, and those who use the world as though they did not make full use of it, for the form of the world is passing away. Verse 32. But I want you to be free from concern. One who is unmarried and is concerned about the things of the Lord and how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife, and his interests are divided. And the woman who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and spirit. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. This I say for your benefit, not to put a restraint upon you, but to promote what is appropriate and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. So Paul just taught us that women are distraction to men. Don't get married, right? Is that what he just taught us? No? You can. It's understanding the judgment that Paul is giving. He's telling them, look, you're under present distress. He lives his life in full devotion to the gospel. In this time of uncertainty or persecution or the things that were going on, we know that in the first century there was persecution going on. The idea is that, verse 32, one who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. Verse 35, this I say for your own benefit, not to put a restraint upon you, but to promote what is appropriate and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. Think about, you're under a distress, under some type of tribulation, some type of trial. Would it be easier or more difficult? And this is a determination you have to make. If you have somebody that is dependent upon you, or that you're dependent upon someone, and you'd say, well, you know, I would like to have that person there. We can commiserate, and they can support us. It's during the Holocaust. Okay, that was a time of great distress for the Jews. Okay, now you're looking to get married, but you're going to be responsible for that wife for husbands. You're going to be responsible for that wife. Are you going to be able to be wholly devoted to the Lord as you're being persecuted? Now, they were being persecuted for their Judaism. But, you know, if you're a Christian, if you're being persecuted in that way, can you be wholly and fully devoted to the Lord and be dealing with that type of mindset when you're worried about a wife and being able to keep her safe and be able to feed her and to be able to deal with the present distress that you're dealing with? Yes, Alex. Oh, the idea is it's a judgment call, and that's what we're talking about. The idea is that there is circumstances in which it may be better for you not to get married. It's a determination that Paul is giving his thoughts on whether you to marry or not. But the idea is that under the present distress, it may be better for you not to, so that you can be wholly devoted to the Lord. Yes, sir.
Also, God found that it's not good for man to be alone.
Yes, sir. Oh, I agree.
I have found in troublesome times, it definitely not good to be alone. Unless his viewpoint on this is the one that you have is more of a distraction or issue because of when I would still idolatry if you're, you know, become a Christian. I can see it that standpoint that he's saying, but everything else that the Bible says generally tends towards man and woman together, stronger, better, etc.
Well, I'm not advocating don't get married. So I don't want to, but I'm trying to show that there are situations and circumstances where it may be better to remain as you are. If you're dealing with situations where it's dire times, you know, you have a responsibility to save your soul and to be wholly devoted to the Lord, because when the time comes, they're facing persecution, and they were hauling people off, throwing them in jail, they were killing them. If my wife is taken, am I going to renounce my faith because of my love for her? Or do I need to be wholly devoted to God? It's a difficult situation, but I'm a Christian and my devotion should be to God. I'm responsible for her well-being, yes, but is it easier for me in a time like that to remain as I am, be wholly devoted to Him, as opposed to having a spouse that I have concerns for, that I need to take care of? And that's what I'm trying to draw out. I think for us it's a little bit harder to see, because we live in a very civil society, one where we're not facing the types of tribulations and trials they are. I would like to think that I would want to be married in that time period, but I can understand what Paul's saying, is that at some point in time, not that you want your wife to be a distraction, but when you're facing dire circumstances, it may be better for you to be wholly devoted and committed to God and not have to worry about, because it's not a matter of, oh, I wish I could just get rid of them, but that is concern that you're going to have for a spouse. That is something that's going to divide your mind and your heart, that you're going to feel sad for, you know, and so if something were to happen to them. Yes, Craig. Rocky?
Keith, you made the point, but I just want to reemphasize it. This particular section, starting in verse 25, there's two important things to remember about it. The first one is he's talking to them about virgins. And evidently, verse 25, not concerning virgins, but looking at the structure there, I see they had a question about virgins. I don't know what specifically they had. It's about virgins, so you can talk about it. So that's important. All this said, talking about to a group about virgins. And the second thing is about the they're in a current, present distress. So for us now to start making application to that, when we don't know what the distress was, and, you know, talking to virgins, so all interpretation needs to be made with those two points in mind. And to say, well, we can use a section and say, well, maybe we should get married because you can serve the Lord better. Well, we already talked about it in the first part of the chapter, because of immoralities, you should have your own husband and wife. So I think it's important to understand the group and the situation there. That's the application, interpretation we got to make when we keep those two points in mind.
Oh, I agree. I'm trying to make the advice or the opinion or the judgment that Paul is giving relatable to us. And so, yeah, I mean, look at who he's talking to. But I think that I think you might look at this and be like, man, it's not for me. But there's application for us. I mean, we're just not dealing with what they're dealing with. And again, I'm not a virgin, but there may be a time or place where this is a counsel that you would need to give somebody. My hope is that we never get to a point in time where that's the case. But this is counsel given by Paul that is important. And there may come a time where you tell somebody that it may be better for you not to get married for one reason or another, because of the current circumstances or distress, but it may be better for you to devote yourself to God as opposed to take on that responsibility, whether you take that responsibility on or whether you are the responsibility taken on. Women, especially in this time period, were dependent upon their husbands a lot more than I think you see today. And that's something else that you have to think about, is constantly being worried, is my husband going to be able to take care of me or to be able to feed me or to keep me safe? It's not just like I'm coming from the man's perspective. So, but I appreciate that. Thank you, Rocky. Any other questions, thoughts, or comments? Yes, sir.
Verse 27 is a verse that highlights the importance of
What translation is that from? That vernacular. Okay, so that's verse 27. So the New American... Well, and I'll point it out, one, that's a translation, not a... it's interpretation, not a translation. Two, you need to harmonize the scriptures and what has been inspired and what has been written. You know, we see that Matthew 5, Matthew 19 both talk about not divorcing except for the cause of adultery. We see that here in verse 10 through 16, not to divorce. We see in Malachi 3 that God hates divorce. So, but we can twist scriptures as much as we want to use them for our purposes. And so it's better to understand what the Bible is teaching and make sure that we do compare versions. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be released. Are you released from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you marry, you have not sinned. The idea here is that he's not telling you can't marry. Okay, but it doesn't mean that you can divorce and then just get remarried. The idea is that in this situation, if you're married, stay married. If you're not, don't seek a wife. But if you do, you haven't sinned. The idea is that you were a virgin and then you get married. Not that, I get divorced and I'm going to remarry again. That makes sense?
Look at verse 40.
Or 39. A wife is bound as long as her husband lives, but if her husband is dead, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. So that kind of better gives us context that you're bound to your husband as long as he lives. Doesn't mean you just divorce him and then get remarried. Yes, Rocky.
You know what? If you back to the setting here on earth, just look at this and see if this makes any sense. Look at verse 27. It says, are you released from your wife? You, as virgin. Why would a virgin be divorced from a wife? The virgin. So here, release is not talking about necessarily divorce. It doesn't make any sense, right? The virgin's not going to be divorced from a wife. Now you're married. But being other than divorce, there's another meaning here besides being divorced. So this, like Steve was saying, it takes a lot of time to go through this text. There's some really difficult things here you need to sort out. My point.
The word released, which you talk about previously, bound, Rocky's point is excellent. This is one of the cases, as you know, I'm not an ESV fan, but they do a good job on this verb. It says, are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek a wife. Instead of release, are you free from a wife? A virgin.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good as well.
And so the application there is, well, then what does it mean? Maybe a virgin was thinking about getting married, make a proposal. Well, I'm thinking about marrying. I'm going to make a proposal out there. Maybe that's the situation that he's addressing. So we don't know the specifics that they raised about virgins, but this text, there's a lot of
yes, Craig. Well, and I, here's the interesting thing about this is we've got a lot of knowledgeable people here, all right. And I've been studying on this, and this is something that I didn't necessarily key in on. One, what's the application that we can make, all right? That you know, be careful about when dealing in these specific times about dividing your focus from God. Context and harmony when we study this sort of stuff, making sure that we harmonize everything, because though two people have a more strict definition or understanding of the passage, the application being a little bit broader in the sense of dealing with married people still falls in the idea of context and harmony, whereas people may just cherry pick it out and try to use it for their own purposes. And so it's good for us to study these things and be aware how they can be used in a different light to justify what you'd want to do. To justify, because I got the time to do this. Sunday, if you were here, I defined fornication or immorality as a sexual relationship between two people who aren't married. All right, now I think everybody here understood what I meant by that. But you got to be careful with the words that you use, and this comes not with just knowledge, but it comes with wisdom, the wisdom of having dealt with this type of thing. When I say sexual relationship, I mean I'm talking about the physical act of sex. I'm talking about sexual intercourse. But when I say sexual relationship, if you caught your wife or your husband kissing somebody else romantically, would you say that's a sexual act? If it's romantically, would you say that that's the case? If somebody was groping or doing something like that, would you say that's a sexual act?
Yes.
I mean, it's used that way. It's not the way I defined it on Sunday, but it is used that way. It's good. So it's good to understand vernacular and how other people use certain things. Be careful the words you use, because that's the way I used it, my definition. But making sure that we're aware of those situations and circumstances, because if it's defined in that way, then you could use it to say, well, okay, then that's what immorality is, and so I can divorce for, just kissing, for groping, for that sort of stuff, as opposed to adultery. I can broaden that scope tremendously and justify it. All that to say, you know, as we're reading these passages, let's make sure we not only study the context here, but let's make sure it harmonizes around everything else, and let's be careful of the vernacular we use and compare translations and that sort of stuff, so we can better understand what the context is teaching. I just want to come back and catch that, because that was brought to my attention and thought y'all understood. But anyway, any more comments? All right, let's keep going. Let's look at verse 36. But if any man thinks that he is acting unbecoming toward his virgin daughter, if she is past her youth, and if it must be so, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin, let her marry. But he who stands firm in her heart, being under no constraint, but has authority over his own will, and has decided this in his own heart, to keep his own virgin daughter, he will do well. So when both he who gives his own virgin daughter in marriage does well, and he who does not give her in marriage will do better. A wife is bound as long as her husband lives, but if her husband is dead, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. But in my opinion, she is happy to remain as she is, and I think that I also have the Spirit of God. So concluding this chapter, he's expressing the idea that it is not wrong to marry. But especially in the present times, especially dealing with virgins and what they're dealing with, it may be better to stay or remain as you are so that you can be wholly devoted to Christ. Questions or comments? Nothing? I'm missing a note somewhere, so hold on, give me one sec. Okay. Let's go back to verses 12 through 16, since we didn't get to cover them really well last class. I did want to pick that back up real quick. So So back in chapter 7, verse 12, it says, "But to the rest I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever, and she consents to live with him, he must not divorce her. And a woman who has an unbelieving husband and consents to live with her, she must not send her husband away. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified through her believing husband. For otherwise your children are unclean, but now they are holy. Yet if the unbelieving one leaves, let him leave. The brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. For how do you know O wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife?" Now, we referenced this earlier in this idea of obligations, responsibilities. But here there is a question about this. So I've been converted. I have a spouse who's not. What is my responsibility? And we're going to cover more of this about the idea of divorce. But what's his thought process here? Don't divorce. Don't divorce your spouse. He goes on to say, and look at verses 11, 12, 13. I'm going to point these out. The different ways that he talks about this divorce. Verse 11, it says, "And that the husband should not divorce his wife." Verse 12 says, "Divorce her." But verse 13 says, "And a woman who has an unbelieving husband and consents to live with her, she must not send her husband away." What is it? What's the understanding there? What's the send her husband away? Divorce. It's good for us to understand this because a lot of times we think of divorce as, oh, we got to run down the courthouse. What is divorce defined in the context of not only these scriptures, but what the Bible teaches? Go back up to 10. Yes, it's highlighted a different color in my Bible, so it mentions it in 15. But if you go back to 10, we'll catch that one too. It says, "But to the married I give instruction, not I, but the Lord, that the wife should not leave." So we've got this idea of should not leave. We have the idea of divorce, not send her husband away. You get to 15, it says, "If the unbelieving one leaves, let him leave." So divorce isn't just an arbitrary thing that you go down to the courthouse and do. You could say that divorce is the severance of a relationship. You send somebody away, you expecting them back? In this context, are they expecting them back? No, not expecting them back. So you can send somebody away. They can leave on their own. Those are synonymous with divorce. So then we get to verse 15. Yet if the unbelieving ones leave, let them leave. The brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases. But God has called us to peace. What does it mean by that? Okay, so they've deserted their partner. So it says the brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases. What does it mean by that?
You don't have to go chasing them and trying to serve them as a spouse. But it doesn't mean you're free to remarry because we have terms on what qualifies to be remarried. As far as meeting the needs that spouses are intended to meet for each other, they're not bound to meet those needs.
So the duties that you have based on that relationship. So, yes, I completely agree. This idea of bondage here does not mean that I'm no longer, and this kind of goes back to the idea of making sure you understand what the context is talking about. Doesn't mean that I'm free to remarry because I'm not under bondage anymore. This idea of bondage is the responsibilities you have as a spouse. I can't chase them down and complete those responsibilities like Josh was talking about. Doesn't mean I'm free to remarry, but I no longer have to fulfill those duties because I can't. And so that's what he's dealing with. Yes, Brandon.
So in verse 39, a wife is bound to her husband. If he dies, she's not bound. How is that bound different?
So
just things I've heard someone talking about, so I want to see how it
works. Okay, so I don't have the notes with me for that, but those two words, the word bound or bondage in 15 is not the same bound or bondage that's in verse 27 and verse 39. So it's translated into English the same way, but they're not the same words. Different meanings behind them. I think that from what I'm presenting tonight, and I get the notes. So I don't think I have them with me tonight, but it is a different word, different meaning. And looking at this, harmonizing it, I'm just going to go with that for now. based on everything else we've read and harmonizing just this passage alone, it doesn't mean you're free to remarry. That type of bound is more dealing with the duties and responsibilities you have, not I'm no longer married to that person. If that's the best way to put it.
And you're right. The word bound is his servitude. She no longer has to be his wife, try to serve him as a wife if he leaves. And she'd have to chase him around, tie him up to do that. The other word bound had to do bound by law, not civil law, God's law, Romans 7. The bound by law as long as your husband lives and also verse 40. It's a different word, it's a different concept. It's a legal bond, not civil.
Well, and so it's good. I'm glad you asked the question, Brandon, because people do. Oh, look, it says this here. It says that there. Think of the idea of works. Works means different things in different places, and it's the same thing here. But the idea of servitude versus actually being married,
bound.
I'm sorry. No, they're not equivalent.
You're
is free. Is free. And still be bound. My bad. We're going to leave it at that. Craig, yes.
It's clear in the text in 10 about state of married versus unmarried. You know, 1 Timothy 11 says, if she does depart, let her remain unmarried. That's in the text. Also down below in 39:40, that word is talking about marriage. And another term before the meeting, we talked about this before, is husband. So up here in verse 11, even if she does depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. Well, she's not married to him. How can she be reconciled to her husband? A husband obviously is that figure of speech. I forget the name of that speech when I say it. But referring to, it was her husband in the past. It was somebody that she was married to. Somebody she's bound to. You know, by law, if you will. And then down here, also the same. It uses the word that in verse 39, a wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives. She may not be married to this guy. In fact, it's in the text that says that she's at liberty to be married to him if she wishes. Her husband dies. Her husband's dead. Does that make any sense? She can't be married to a dead person. So again, you have to be careful with this terminology because you're going through it. How should you define it? What are you talking about here? It's not just as much as actually right now living with.
Well, we're gonna deal with some of this on Sunday. So before Michael buzzes me, I'm a couple minutes over. We're gonna be dealing with this idea of being married, or not being married, but the idea of you still having an obligation to that spouse, being bound. We're gonna deal with that Sunday as we deal with divorce and reconciliation. So Sunday morning, be here for that too. Maybe I can do a better job of articulating. But thank you for being here and being attentive this evening. Thank you.